This lady looks like Mrs. Akmonic from ALF.
Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon episode 182. This is the newscast for April 24th, 2011. I'm your host, Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. With me on the show today, we have Onizumi and Harknell of the amazing onizumi.com and harknell.com and 5 to 10 other web addresses that I won't even attempt to name. Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, probably the most important URL is interventioncon.com, our webcomic-y indie creator convention. Yay! Because harknell.com's down now.
No, it's not down. It's just being
retooled. Well, it's in transition. Let's put it this way. He's going to have a blog eventually.
Yes, eventually.
Like I'll do. Do you want to maybe speak for a minute about what InterventionCon is? Maybe where it is and when it is, since I know you have those dates, and that would be a good thing to point.
Intervention is a independent comic online creator con, interventioncon.com. It's happening September 16th through 18th in Rockville, Maryland.
The Hilton Rockville.
Right outside D.C.
Yes, outside D.C. Starting to lose track of things.
And it's awesome. If you do a comic and you want to learn stuff, you should go there because there's workshops, there's dances, there's lots of crazy cosplay burlesque stuff. And this year we have Shannon Garrity and who else is new?
Oh, Jenny Breeden.
Jenny Breeden's new. And Ross Scott's there.
Yes.
And 40 some other people are there. And actually, I think we're adding five or six more people and three bands this year. But they're not announced yet.
Right. Oh, and don't forget... one, possibly two super art fight shows.
Yes, probably definitely. Two. The second one will probably make me cry, but that's okay. You're allowed to do that.
The uncensored version was a hit last year.
Yes.
And it kept hitting.
I still have people come up to me and mention that and cringe at that. And
as do I.
Keep the red pen from Jamie Noguchi.
It was your fault, Harknell. It was your fault. You mentioned Mantrain.
Oh, God. Okay, let's not go for that.
Now you're bringing it up on my newscast. So, all right. Well, thank you both for being on the show. Also with us today, as always, Fess, who keeps everything up and running, whose stuff can be found at psiwebcomic.com. Hey, Fess.
Hello.
And also Eric, our man behind the scenes, finding all the articles that we were talking about here today, whose work can be found at Exern.com. That's EXIERN.com.
Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, man, my pleasure.
One day I will make a webcomic that you can remember the spelling of. I promise.
I always spell it out. This is why I always spell it out. You know, I want to make sure. I mean, if it was an I before E except after C kind of situation, I would. Well, it is. Damn it.
It is an I before E, except after C.
Well, there you go.
And everyone acts like I'm crazy on that. I was beated up all through elementary school over that stupid rule, and I use it, and now everyone goes, oh, you're actually using that rule?
Shit. Crazy.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into the news articles. So every week we try and rally and tally all of the most recent news that is affecting webcomics or the people and things around them. So we'll start off with an article on net neutrality. Europe has decided to side with telecoms in their ability to throttle traffic. As of about a month, maybe a month and a half from now, it says, this article, by the way, from GigaOhm.com, the result is that in over a month, ISPs in European states will have to be transparent about the measures they take to control traffic and be straightforward about the connection speeds when they're advertising, but there will be no ban of traffic shaping measures, as such bandwidth throttling or the practice of limiting of certain kinds of traffic, such as P2P files, actions with that which ISPs say are necessary to prevent network congestion. But critics could be used, critics suggest could be used for commercial gain. In return, internet companies will have to meet minimum levels of service and make it easy for customers to switch to another provider. All of that basically in short meaning that Europeans are going to be just fine. Now, Europe has been dealing with net neutrality issues. Meanwhile, here in America, we've had our own net neutrality issues. Have any of you guys been following what's been going on net neutrality these days?
I try to keep up on it to some degree. Obviously, reading a few of the major, blogs that tend to track it pretty well. Boing Boing and Tech Dirt tend to be all over them. We have definitely a different situation in America than Europe, in that Europe tends to have much more competition for what you can do. In America, we all know, you get one cable provider in your town and that's pretty much it.
Yep.
DSL being very unlikely for most people to even be a secondary option. So while Europe obviously can get, this is not necessarily the world's greatest result for Europe, it would be atrocious if this actually ended up happening in America the same rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a quick shout out to our Comcast overlords, if I may. And I think really we should move straight into the next article. Though I will say, for those of you out there that are interested in net neutrality, it's a very pressing topic and affects, if you're hearing this podcast, then it affects you right now. So you should go check out and see what's going on in it and get involved. There's plenty of organizations trying to make a difference in the world of net neutrality. And we here on the show are for it. So be sure to go check that out. Just Google the thing. It'll come up, I promise. All right, on to Dark Horse. This article via Newsarama, Dark Horse is starting a digital initiative that is already launched, and you can go to digital.darkhorse.com where you can see the first issues of Joss Whedon's Frey, which came out 5 years ago, and also Criminal Macabre, also Abe Sapien, The Drowning, are all unlocked with Umbrella Academy and Mass Effect on the way. You can also pay $1.99, thanks to Apple, who made them charge $1.99, to see such things in the future as Amazing Screw-On Head, Axe Cop, BPRDs Galore, Classic Usagi Yojimbo, and a list that's so long that I've only gotten to see. It's nice to see Dark Horse trying some new interesting stuff on their web app and on their online site. Have you guys had a chance to take a look at this or have any thoughts on the matter? Let's start with Oni and Harknell, you guys.
Well, I don't tend to honestly pay as much attention to a lot of these guys, mainly because they tend to be pretty feeble with what they do. And, your one mention about, and it's from 5 years ago, a lot of their stuff, I mean, it's a good idea for them, honestly, but a lot of times it also seems to come off as, oh my God, we're not going to be making much money off these print comics, so we got to figure out some way of making money off the online stuff, and well, we're just going to charge you X amount for you to read this and not really think about the whole thing in a realistic kind of way. Hoping that people are just going to go and buy the exact same comics for $1.99 that they would pay regular price for. But
well, it's the same problem with ebooks. It seems that like even when ebooks come out, when books come out, you got to wait like 6 months to a year in some cases, not all, for it to be available digitally. You know, it just seems like more of a hardship just to get it when you want it. And, okay. More, the price you want.
Oh, good.
As of right now, isn't it the case that these companies, these kind of bigger publishing companies, they rely on their income coming in from comics. They see print drying up. Shouldn't they be the biggest innovators in the market right now instead of the ones playing catch-up?
Well, I mean, it's sort of I really kind of hated this Dark Horse initiative because it took comics that you could get, like Axe Cop. It took a comic you could get free on the web and made it more difficult and more expensive to get it on the web, which it's just sort of crazy. And, I mean, the reason they're doing this is they're seeing it dry up, and they say we must make money from the books itself, and not really understanding how to use the IP to generate money. And it's just, it's always so backwards.
Well, it's always, you know, it's the same thing we see with the music industry, with movies and all that. They're used to a concept that doesn't exist as much anymore, which is, you know, locking people out of stuff, you know, physical goods. Mm-hmm. And when they look online, it's almost like seeing the surface with nothing behind it. And they think that they can replicate what other people have done simply by replicating the surface, but not understanding the deeper part.
Yeah.
Like one of the biggest things that they tend to screw up is, like, for instance, I'm not sure about this app, but a lot of times you'll find that, like, when they have these situations where you can buy, quote unquote, buy issues, if you decide you're no longer part of the service, a lot of different companies have made the horrible mistake where, oh, well, now you can't look at any of it. Yes. And it's like, well, guys, you've actually, as you said, as somebody was saying, you know, you've actually, like, done it worse than what would have just been normal. So they see it more like, how can we squeeze money out of this, but not like, how can we actually implement this in a way that makes sense to people?
Yep, all of the app programs, including Dark Horse's, the agreement is you are renting the comics, and they reserve the right to take it away from you at any time, and that's a good way to annoy people.
Yeah, I mean, like, renting, it's like, I mean, it's not like it's a monthly fee like Netflix where you can just read as much as you want. You just, you buy them as if they're a physical thing.
Well, here's the key. If you were doing something like, okay, Rhapsody. Rhapsody's concept is, of course, you don't own any of the songs. You can just listen to whatever. The thing that blows my mind is, okay, you could do something. And I think this would actually be kind of an interesting thing. And I think people would actually pay this. Say, for instance, Dark Horse did a fee where it was like $4.99 a month and you could read anything.
Oh, I'd buy that in a second.
But you didn't keep it. But the thing is, in cases like that, the weird thing I see about them is I don't know exactly, but I can only imagine that a large percentage of all of their comics done within recent times are all digital. The ability to put almost their entire catalog online has got to be pretty high.
Well, simply by being able to print their comics nowadays, they have to have digital files because
exactly.
I mean, so they have the digital files. They definitely have them.
No, I mean, a Netflix or Hulu-like service would be great, and they have tried this. Marvel tried this. You had the Marvel archives, and it failed horribly. The reason was they said, you can have access to all the comics that no one reads from the past.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're not getting it.
I mean, it's again, going back to like how bad things are with companies. You know, you're seeing it with Netflix right now, where a lot of the major movie companies are essentially trying to do that with Netflix. Like, Netflix has a pretty good catalog across everything, but they keep pushing Netflix to be basically, here's the old crap stuff. You can't have new stuff. And it's almost the same. It's the same concept. It's like, well, we still want you to go out and buy the disc. We don't really want you to do anything else. And it's just a terrible thing. It's like, well, this is what you want. This is what we want. And what we want is what we're going to do. And what you want, you're going to take exactly what we want. And it's like, no, that's not how things work.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Okay, I got something on Netflix the other day, and it was the normal menu, and it had, you know, your chapter selection, your play, all your special features. And when I clicked on special features, it said, sorry, this is a rental disc, and we don't put the special features on rental disc. You're going to have to buy it to see them.
Yeah. What?
Believe it.
No, they do that.
That's like a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something that a lot of the video companies started doing, which were special versions only for rental things, like Blockbuster getting them. Yeah, and what's your first thought? It isn't Blockbuster sucks. You go, those goddamn video, you know, screw them, you know, like you're not going to be like, well, obviously I should go out and buy the disc. I'm going to, you know, no, you don't think that.
I have a small apartment in New Jersey and I might move soon. I can't buy any more things to sit on my shelf. I can't do it. I love Netflix, but
But the thing you got to realize is these companies have been able to get away with this for years. I mean, especially comic book companies, they were able to sell us anything, and we had to pay for what they were doing. If they wanted to do 1,000, crossover with every comic and force us to buy every comic, they could do it, and we had to just sit there and take it. And they haven't adjusted to the digital era where there is, if you start messing with us, we're just going to go and pirate it. You know, and that's the thing they can't get their head around, because they're thinking, yes, we can define the rules, and you can't anymore. You have to meet the consumer halfway. You have to make the experience somewhat pleasant, and they're not doing that.
Yeah, they're not thinking of what our specific needs and wants are. Like, I mean, I've been known to purchase a physical book in a bookstore, put it on my bookshelf, and then technically illegally, download a digital version so I can read it on my phone, because I just don't have time to carry a book around. I can't do it. I'm willing to pay for it, but it needs to fit how I live right now, which is constantly on the move.
Yeah, well, if you were to get an official version, you'd have to download 8 different things.
It wasn't
and it
available.
Would have to be digitally signed by this, and
it wouldn't
work on 3 different.
No, but I'm saying,
their concept would be, even if there was one, it would be only on this device, only with this. You have to go through these 8 different things to get it.
Yeah.
And then if you move to a different device, oh, yeah, you got to buy it again.
Well, just recently,
that crap doesn't work.
A book that I wanted was finally put out on iBooks, and it was like $15 for this book that I would probably, you know, it was more than this particular book should have been, because it was like, it's a fitness book, like we'll talk about calories and stuff. And I'm like, I think it was actually more expensive than what you could buy it used, very close to the new price. So I was like, what? Digital?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of the issue that everyone's seeing right now. Now we'll get back to this a little later, because I think we'll be touching in on Netflix again in a bit. But let's move on to our next article, where Scott Adams, genius that he is, got just totally burned.
Ha.
Scott Adams gets smoked is the only way I know how to put it. So Scott Adams has gotten in trouble a fair amount for a bunch of things lately. He's been a prolific writer outside of his comic. He's written a bunch of books, a bunch of op-eds. His most recent op-ed saying, "I did badly in school, but I'm awesome." For anyone that read that in the Wall Street Journal. Didn't you guys read that one?
I didn't catch that particular one.
No, I've
read a lot of the other ones.
It's linked in this next article that we're going to talk about. So this article via Gawker tells us that Scott Adams was going onto his own posts about his own stuff and logging in as a commenter named Planned Chaos and then defending himself in the third person. In other words, he's his own biggest fan. There's a term for this, doing this kind of thing, and I just can't think of the term.
Sock puppeting.
Thank
it's
you.
In the title.
I was on that. I was on the actual article. Excuse me. Anyway, there's a forum post on webcomics.com, which is how we find the link, and thank you to them. So Scott Adams, thoughts?
He did everything that you shouldn't do. I mean, it literally was like a George Costanza moment where every instinct he had was wrong. He got on there, and people were sort of panning him a little bit. So he didn't like that. He got on under this other account and started defending himself, which just flamed the fires, because when you go online and argue with people, they're just going to argue back and it's going to get worse. Then he was caught sock puppeting, and he kind of denied it for a little bit, and then he said, "All right, I will be the bigger man and come out and admit I'm sock puppeting," after he'd been caught. and then his parting shot was, you know, "I'm sorry I left so your horse," I forget the right term, but he sort of said, "Well, I'm going to leave now, and I'm sorry that I ruined your horrible, you know, troll den site." And it was just like everything you could do to tick people off, step by step, he did.
Here's another one of him sock puppeting. So again, writing himself about himself in the third person on Reddit. "If an idiot and a genius disagree, the idiot generally thinks the genius is wrong. He also has a lot of idiot reasons to back his idiot belief. That's how the idiot mind is wired. It's fair to say you disagree with Adams, but you can't rule out the hypothesis that you're too dumb to understand what he's saying. And he's a certified genius. Just saying.
Wow.
That's amazing. You know, look, everybody, you know, there's a lot of people who do sock puppeting. I mean, you know, there's always the groups of people that try to game Reddit through Reddit dig and all the whatever. They try to, you know, they make 17,000 accounts and they try to do it. Although this is taking it to an epic degree where you're not just trying to like plus one yourself. You're trying to actually pump up your like.
Yeah, like he's not trying to get traffic. You know, I'm just trying to think about where he's coming from. Like he's not trying to get traffic. He just must have time on his hands and be sensitive.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, I think he's just sensitive. I think, and we've had a couple of stories of people of professional cartoonists taking down their forms and this sort of stuff. And yet again, I think our last two stories are about people not understanding the web, and not understanding that there are going to be people. The web allows people to come to you directly and say you suck to your face, and you've got to take that. You cannot be sensitive about it. And
see, my take on all of this is that Scott Adams is just coming across as lonely. Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, like, all he's doing here is proving that he's just doesn't know, have anyone to talk to, and he doesn't feel comfortable talking as himself, so he's talking as all these other people, and then all he's doing is defending himself. But I see this, and I just see a guy that needs friends, you know? I mean, Let's feel a little bad for the guy. He's made too much money. He doesn't know what to do with himself anymore. He you know, draws the stiffest looking cartoons I've ever seen. And, you know, it must be a tough life, you know. Must be.
I think the part that gets most people feeling sort of like how this is just wacky is, you know, theoretically Dilbert being about like people working for what seems to be a computer company. Although I would make the claim that they're actually more engineers in the classic sense, not like, you know, modern, quote-unquote, modern computer people. But it just seems kind of even so, – like if he was writing a comic, you know, that was literally about like, you know, old people and not, you know, nothing to do with computers at all, I think it'd be a little bit more like, oh, well, he just doesn't get it. But when people go, well, he's supposedly writing about like modern people who supposedly know the, you know, computers and all that, it just seems weirder that he would just not get that.
And he's perceived as successful, and successful people don't usually have time to do this.
Yeah, it's just weird.
He made a comic about sock puppeting.
He did.
So
self-loathing.
He understands the concept, but
I forgot about
weird.
That.
It's weird.
I saw that, and all I could think was that someone told him what sock puppeting was. He wrote the comic about it, and then he went, that's a pretty good idea. It's so funny. Like, and I also I got to hand it to Gawker, and it's not often I say that phrase. Right at the end of the article is a link that says there's actually a funny Dilbert strip about this sort of thing. And I thought that was honestly pretty great. I did double check the comments on the post. I didn't see anything that stood out as obviously being from Scott Adams himself. So I think we're in the clear on that one. So I think he at least has learned the lesson to not comment on these articles about him commenting on articles.
What would help?
Yeah, we hope.
We could only hope. All right, we'll move on to the next article then, which brings us to an article via Bleeding Cool News. P. Craig Russell is converting. First he illustrated a comic based on the Bible story of Salome. And now they're adapting that same thing into an app that will be available for free on Graphically's Android, iPad, iPhone, web, and desktop applications. And there's a nice YouTube video, a nice 4.5-minute video, where he talks about that adaptation. Which, honestly, I don't know if there's necessarily much to say except that it looks pretty cool. Did you guys check it out?
I looked at it briefly. You know, obviously, moving anything to the devices that people are using is a smart move.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, we just talked previously about like how big companies will do it. But it's, you know, if you have the ability, it's definitely a smart move to bring it out in more ways that people will want to actually read your stuff.
Do you guys think that all the formats that artists are expected in nowadays has made it too hard for the individual person to work within them all? I mean,
iOS, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's so much, because there's so much that it's expected. Oh, well, you need to have your art and a website and a mobile site and maybe an app and maybe a this and maybe a that. You know, that it's maybe too much for an individual person, you know, who we here on the show are generally trying to look out for. It's too much for an individual person to keep up with or be able to handle on their own.
We're in this really weird mid zone where it is too much for the hobbyist anymore to do it right. And at the same time, the companies cannot figure out how to do it. And so we're in this place where there is this vacuum where you have to be a genius in 1,000 things or, you know, have a big team, but you can't get a big team because the companies don't know how to do it. And it's frustrating, I can say.
Yeah. I mean, we got into developing for iOS really early, and we actually have webcomics. Is it Webcomic Central is a generic name, right?
Yeah.
Mine's named Chaos Central. And, you know, it's basically an RSS aggregator that integrates with all of the creators' presences on social media. And we wanted to bring, you know, more of a, you know, you can read stuff in that app to that, but it's really complicated. You're totally right. You definitely need one or two people to work with you that are really technical, you know, because we had three people working on that, including me.
Yeah. The thing is, though, we're also in another interesting midpoint area, which is the reason why, coming out with an iOS app, coming out with an Android app, with being the two biggest app phone kind of things, that would be a great thing. But one of the things that is kind of nice is that mobile devices being able to actually just look at the regular web is really pretty much reaching the point where it isn't really much of a degradation from the desktop experience.
Right.
So as you get to a certain point in time, my suspicion is apps as a way of comic reading, especially if you're talking web comics, you won't really need it. As for the basic stuff, I mean, if you want to buy
things. I mean, there are people that have emailed me and asked me what I think because they were like, we read your comic every time it comes out, but we never go to your site because we do it through an RSS. And they're like, what do you think about that? And I'm like, well, you're not going to the site, so maybe that hits ad revenue a little bit. But, I mean,
well, there's RSS.
People read so many comics, I think, that I think you're right, but I don't know.
Well, you're going to read it in some fashion. I mean, you're either going to load up a website, you're going to read it through an app thing that does it,
yeah.
Or you're going to read it through essentially a PDF reader in an app, which is what most of the app things really essentially are. You know, and you're right. I mean, it's definitely difficult for one person to go out and do all the different things. I think, though, within a few years, we're going to see people who think that apps are like the big revenue thing for the future. It's only probably going to be a temporary thing and end up being just a small part of any revenue scheme.
Revenue steam?
Well, scheme as in figuring out ways to make money off of what you're doing. You know, obviously, you know, print books for most webcomics people is one scheme, so to speak, of making money. Ads are another. If you can do apps, you can make money off of that, theoretically.
Merchandise, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I meant, like books. Or having people pay you to do things.
Yeah, you know, I get paid speaking engagements, so that's another avenue of revenue.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people are trying to hook onto apps as like the future of like how we're all going to make money for the next 500 years, and my suspicion is it's only going to be temporal. for maybe the next few years at best, and then you're going to see people like retreating back from that concept when you don't need to use apps for anything.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked about this before, in that the app is not a really good moneymaker when you start taking a look at all the different pieces out of that pie that are being taken. Selling a PDF is a lot cheaper and a lot more price effective than an app, because you don't have to go through Apple, you don't have to go through other things, you just sell the PDF.
Yeah, people are afraid of PDF stuff, though, because generally you can lock PDFs, of course, but then if you have any regular tools, you can unlock that in 5 seconds. Yeah. And people get afraid, oh, they're just going to share my PDF everywhere. But, you know, it's the same thing as movie and music. Like, the people that are your fans and really want to reward you for doing your work will pay. The people that don't care about you at all and want to read it for free will always get it. And the people in the middle, you know, you just have to price it at the right amount to get the bulk of them to pay you. And that's just all there is to it.
Yeah. Let's just hope that – I just always think it's funny the people that will steal it and be jerks about that. And that's like – but now that they've stolen from you, they're going to cherish reading something you wrote anyway. I just always thought that was a funny concept.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, cheap people have always existed. Cheap people will always do what they do, and
yeah, like I know people that'll never ever pay for any game, any whatever, but they never would have. They would have just sat smoking pot or something in their room if they couldn't have gotten it for free.
They just won't do it, you know. They just won't use it, and there's no money there no matter what you do. It's just those people are just those people.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next article then. this comes from Comic Book Resources, Robot 6, where, and I got a lovely text, where Mark Waid talks about the fundamental difference of digital comics versus print comics about 10 years after the rest of us, it sounds like. According to Wade, digital comics are to print as TV was to radio drama. When TV was first invented, no one understood its potential, and shows were very dialogue-focused in imitation of radio. It wasn't until folks like Milton Berle came along and integrated old vaudevillian elements that people realized what TV could really do. The same is true for digital comics. There's some cool things that digital comics can do that print can't, but it's going to take some serious thinking and experimentation for people to figure out what those are, though I'm pretty sure they aren't motion comics. I gotta say, I read this and thought to myself, what, like, when was this posted? Because I don't know about you guys, I feel like I've heard this for the last 10 years.
Not from industry professionals. I mean, this is, I think the theme of our show today is the publishing industry finally realizes that web comics are important. I just got the feeling that Mark was saying, look, for a while we've been pursuing this as if it was just another way of distributing comics and we could do business as usual. And we've talked about that in the apps. The comic companies want to do business as usual. I feel like what he's saying here is, look, at the comic company, the publishing companies have to look at this fundamentally differently. Because it's a fundamentally different medium. And, yeah, we knew that, but they're figuring it out.
Yeah, you know, to me, what we need to figure out as artists isn't the digital medium of the comic itself. It's the site around it. Like, yeah. The template for the way that we navigate comics is the same as it's been for, like, the last 15 years. The whole first, previous, next, last thing is super outdated, and all we've done is rehash it. Now, WordPress has made things a lot easier, and comic press has become really prevalent, and there are some great things out there for those basics, but I am so amazed that we haven't seen anything better in just the website itself that's around it. I mean, look at what websites can do nowadays. Look at web apps and HTML5 and what, you know, Twitter's website can do and what all these online places can do, and look at the crappy websites of all of us.
But I have to contest here for a second. I wasn't going to say anything, but you're docking the navigation, and you're complaining that it's not evolved that much aside from maybe it click on the comic. But then again, you're just reading comics through an archive. What more do you need? You don't need anymore. Why break what's so simple?
It's not about need. It's about providing a better experience because the technology provides us better options. That was invented at a time where, like, clicking through pages was the best way to do that because it cut down on load times and it cut down on bandwidth and it cut down on a lot of other things. Now you've got pages like, who here has a Tumblr? Who here has infinite scroll set on Tumblr and just goes through and just reads everything by just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling? Next thing you know, you've wasted 20 minutes. Why doesn't any webcomic have that?
Because that only counts as one hit on your ads.
Or have their comics set up and tagged and thoroughly integrated in a way that lets you really explore and go through it in a way other than just the linear setup.
Well, there's a lot. There's a few things about how this works that have technical issues, and there's a few things that how this works based on human issues. You know, technical issues can be, you know, like when we're talking about the fact that a lot of mobile devices exist. Well, the more freaky you get with how you do JavaScript and, you know, all these other different ways of getting crazy scrolling and whatever, that can screw up on various different devices, different desktops, blah, blah, blah. So you have, like, you have to be a little bit with that. Also, you know, they haven't been very good with making certain things work really well for sharing purposes. You know, we know, like, you get to page 17 in a JavaScript archive, and it's like, well, there's no way to show that to anybody, and you sort of end up at you know. So there are technical reasons, but human reasons are also simple, which is, you know, as Fez was saying, to some degree, people read books the same way. I mean, technically, you know, a book is flip page, flip page, flip page. You know, you can do certain things, and I think some websites show off concepts in terms of how the interface works now, which are really nice, and they're very JavaScript-y up. But I think comics have, like if it's a comic, then it's a comic. If it's going to be a motion comic or it's going to be an integrated movie with parts that are actual static, but then you pop out and it shows a video and it goes, like, yes, you could do really advanced things with some kind of multimedia integration. But I think comics tend to be still comic, next comic, next comic, next comic.
Yeah, well, I have seen on Twitter more than one person saying, well, it's not like a comic press standard format that I'm used to seeing. I just hit the back button. I mean, I think a lot of, like, for me, I've always been reluctant to upgrade, so to speak, my site because I want it to be accessible on all the mobile devices that I can get it on. And I want to not scare the most nervous user that might come to the site, if that makes any sense.
I mean, I don't know. It sounds like, honestly, to me, it sounds like a cop-out. I could, like, I think there are enough web designers and developers among us that we can tackle most of this stuff and come up with better ways of doing some of this. I mean,
well, Ross, well, one thing that I would say is there's definitely huge upside for metadata entries for comics. I know that, you know, like if you think about it, like wouldn't it be really neat if most comic sites had something where you click on a button and you can see every comic that has a particular character in it? Or you could, you know, organize by location. Or you could, like, there's a lot of stuff that you can do now that's a lot easier for people to find things about your comic, especially if you have, like, a storyline comic where people go, holy crap, they just, referenced something. And I don't remember where it is.
Storyline comic, especially if you have a comic that's nothing but, like, these are all the comics about coffee. Here they all are.
Exactly. The problem with that is it takes people who are doing the comic organizational time. And I think that goes back to, like, how do you get it out on 18 different things? Well, you know, going through your entire archive of hundreds of comics and tagging each one is something that I think very few people want to do. But it's something that I think definitely is one area that I think most people aren't doing, which I think would be at least a step towards what I think you're suggesting.
Yeah, and those capabilities are already in WordPress and Comic Press.
Yeah, they totally are. They just aren't highlighted.
Yeah, because we're busy. I mean, the problem, we're hobbyists, and the fact that we can get a freaking page up on time is usually a miracle. I mean, expecting more of us is sometimes hard. And on the other end, on really more advanced stuff, you know, I still just want to read the comic. I don't care about your pretty site. So if your pretty site is taking me download times or preventing me to come back to the page I was last on, I'm going to leave you. Because I don't care about your site, I just care about reading the comic. So make the comic quicker and easier for me to read. Everything else, I don't care.
All right. Well, with that, we'll move into the next topic. And anyone who is on my side on this one and wants to help really innovate the way webcomic template sites work, please talk to me. Find me on the Twitters at Ross Scott. This is seriously my project for the summer, is trying to come up with something better.
Well, I look forward to seeing what you come up with, definitely.
Yeah, sounds like it might be really cool.
I am going to kick all y'all asses on this one. This is going to be amazing. But anyway, speaking of website redesigns, that brings us to our next article via – where is this via?
Daily
Cartoonist, where Kaggle, which is a popular site that collects editorial cartoons – also a wonderful exercise for the ladies, just saying. No, wait, slightly different. Anyway, Kaggle talks about why aren't editorial cartoons more popular on the web, and describes in that very article how their website is totally bass-ackwards. Archive.com site is designed to old web standards, encouraging stickiness, readers looking at multiple pages and thereby multiple ads. Though it is still popular, our Kaggle.com site is a web dinosaur. Thinking about advertising on the web has changed, throwing more repetitious banner ads at readers who are flipping through pages of cartoons doesn't have the little value it once had. The new metric value is the time readers spend on the site, and in a particular article of the site, leading us to work with NBC.com in MSNBC.com in a whole new way. They also talk in the same article about how no one cared about having things sorted by artist. When looking at editorial cartoons, they cared about sorting it by topic, and how sorting things by topic made things a lot made their traffic skyrocket, whereas having them by artists did not, because no one cares about who drew the comic. They care about, is there an editorial cartoon on the latest topic or the topic I'm looking for?
I mean, going back to what we were just talking about, I think one of the biggest things, you know, that people can start really doing innovatively online is the fact that metadata and tagging for content is really one of the most powerful things you can do with how you do the internet. I mean, obviously clicking, surfing concepts, moving around, it doesn't cost anything to do this except for time, and that's where you can – you can see a major major positive, obviously, right here.
Yep. This sort of makes your point. Bad website design and bad focus can kill interest.
All right. Well, I think it's great that they put this article out there, though I got to say I've read the whole thing, and, you know, I'm not sure exactly what their point is, except that we're doing it badly.
Well, the point is that newspapers are saying, you know, no one likes editorial cartoons anymore. We're going to digital, and no one likes editorial cartoons on digital. And the point the editorial cartoonists are making is people would like editorial cartoons if you would just do it right and stop killing our product.
Well, let's call editorial cartoons what they are. Joke-a-day comics.
Yes.
I mean, technically, really, that's essentially what they are, but they're usually political in nature or a little bit, you know, slightly different than how you would do it normally, quote unquote normally, as a webcomic. But essentially, they're joke-a-day comics, and they're old-school joke-a-day comics. And, you know, it's just they have to kind of fall in more with how, you know, webcomics that do it work, and they would probably do a lot better.
All right. Well, with that, I encourage all of you listening and following along to check out the links to this and all of the stories we're covering here today. All of them will be in the post for this podcast, which can be found at webcomicbeacon.com. Remember, this is episode 182 if you're looking for anything in particular. And with that, we'll move on to the next article. I know it was marked in the notes, not webcomic related, but since we were talking about Netflix before, I'll bring it up anyway. This article found via GigaOM talking about on-demand services like Netflix dwarfing media ownership. And now it's loading. The big Hollywood studios have relied on DVD sales as the biggest portion of home entertainment spending over the last several years, but consumers are becoming less and less interested in owning content, such as Onizumi in her apartment, and are moving more towards convenient on-demand video solutions. Now when trying to make home entertainment decisions, consumers are turning to Netflix instead of DVD, and Redbox even pirated copies of the films online, according to Google search data, showing that the amount of, I mean, I wish there was a scale on this chart that they put in it, but basically the amount of times people are searching for the free movie terms of free movies, movie torrent, and free online movies versus DVDs, movies on DVD, new DVD releases, and top DVD rentals are much, much lower.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I bought a DVD, and I can tell you what kind of was the last straw for me. Well, not the last straw. And it's not that I'm not going to buy a DVD in the future, but the whole thing where there was a post a while ago talking about how George Lucas wants you to buy Star Wars 7 times. I was like, you know what? No. It just irritated me. You know, repackaging things and, you know, here.
Well, I think, going back to what we were saying before, in many ways, people don't buy DVDs. They want to watch a movie.
Yeah.
The DVD is the methodology for watching a movie. They're not buying the DVD. Nobody cares about a DVD. You could, whatever. It could be a VVD, whatever. So the idea that the medium itself is what people are interested in is a dead concept. It's not that. It's they want to watch the movie. And the fact that digital on-demand services are easier ways to watch the movie, it just makes sense. That's what people want to do.
Okay, well, let's bring this into webcomics. How is this going to affect, like, if this is the way people want to view things, they don't care about the format, they just want to see it, which fits right in with a lot of the stuff we've been saying today, then how does that affect artists trying to sell books of work, collections of work, and that sort of thing? How is it that artists are supposed to deal with that? What's the Netflix equivalent that artists can sell? Because we've all seen that the paid content model for comics has not ever worked, or not ever worked consistently.
Well, yeah, again, go ahead, Eric.
There's two sides to this. First of all, just like Netflix says, the extras on the CD you have to pay for, that's one method of saying, you get the story, you can come in here, and I'm going to give you the story for free, but if you want the extras, you got to pay me money. And that's a pretty effective method, because it doesn't tick people off. They get the media, and then they say, well, I want more of this. And you say, well, I just happen to have more of this, but you have to give me money. The other one is simply the ease of use. Going to a website is not the easiest way to view it. And if you make it easier, either through an app, a PDF, or a collection book, specifically a collection book that, maybe focuses on a particular topic, organizes things in a different way, yet again, that's something people are willing to pay for, making their life easier.
Well, there's two things, too, which is selling yourself is one part of it, too, which, a lot of people in music industry, selling yourself is paying, doing a concert, because people are going to go pay to see you do the music. The other thing that I find interesting about what you were talking about, Ross, with books is any book sales whatsoever is a clear example of there is something beyond just the content when you're talking about webcomics, which is technically you never have to buy a book for most people's webcomic to actually watch it. The fact that webcomics do tend to sell a fairly decent amount of books is a fact that there's something else beyond that, which is rewarding the creator, collectability, and feeling of interaction where, like, you feel like you definitely have a part of the success of somebody.
Yeah, and so I know I buy books because I don't feel I can see the art as well on a monitor that
well,
I can.
Well, that's
in
an
a
extra
book.
Too. That's going back to what was saying before. It was like, there's something extra about it.
All right. Well, let's just hope people keep buying books. And honestly, I do have plenty of people who still ask for books. I think there is something, but I wonder if there's something to be said for you know, being able to watch something anytime. I mean, that's what's at the core of on demand is, oh, I can watch it whenever. That's at the core of buying the DVD is I can watch it whenever. But what Netflix is doing, and it's hidden, is that not everything on Netflix that's streaming is available on streaming all the time. Things come in and they flow out just as much. And I guess one other point I could that we could explore is, you know, is there something to that for comics having, you know, the last 3 months available or the last year available, or having certain things flow in and out?
No, that your archive is, people have tried that. It has been a failure. Your archive is how you get people acquainted with the comic, and unless you're a gag a day, you're gonna lose people on that.
Well, is there any equivalent of that that seems to work so well for these video things, or is it just because they're so big, because it's a movie, because it's these bigger kind of cultural items that they're allowed to do that?
Yeah, I think we struggle with obscurity as general comic. You know, most web comics, that's your biggest thing. I mean, if everybody knew who you were and it simply was selling your content, I think it would be a different story.
Well, you know, and also I think the Netflix situation where you see stuff come and go is actually more of a problem Netflix has, where they're not doing that, as far as I can determine, because they want to actually make the content feel more scarce. I think it really comes down to a lot of the companies basically demand huge amounts of money, licensing terms, and Netflix can only keep them for a certain period of time for them. You know, I guarantee if Netflix could have every single film they've ever had on their streaming live without it bankrupting them, they would probably do it. I think the more content you have available, the more it benefits you, because one of the things, like just like the music model, it's way better to have a million people know who you are and maybe, you know, less people buying your stuff than 1,000 people have bought your CD and, you know, 990,000 have no idea who you are. You know, scaling is almost always better to have more content available than less, just because the more that you can get out there, the better it is if you go to secondary models on how you can make money, like appearances or promotional things, yeah, or being part of other people's work. Or
web comics are really not that different from like your local band that's trying to work its way up, I think.
Yeah, well, at least not anymore.
All right. Well, thanks. That's makes for some really interesting discussion. Remember, if you want to help discuss things that you've heard here on the podcast, find us on the Twitters or go to our website and participate in the comments on this post, where I know I'll be checking in and seeing and keeping up with things, as well as other people on the show. So just head on over to the Webcomic Beacon, which can be found at webcomicbeacon.com for participating, or also the Ustream chat, which we always have going when we record live, which is Sundays at 10:30 Eastern. All right, a few more articles or news items that we're going to just kind of zip through here. Next one being via Bleeding Cool of McPherson College having a online edition PDF of a zombie comic especially made and geared towards students and teaching them about the library. So how to use your college library as a zombie webcomic. I actually also saw this on Boing Boing today. Well, it probably got posted yesterday, but I saw it today. And it's a really awesome comic, I gotta say. They even have the librarian with a blowtorch, I'm sorry, flamethrower, like burning a ton of zombies. It's pretty amazing. Have you guys seen this yet? Because it's really funny.
It's hilarious. It is really fun.
they have the library in the science building have an actual floating like space airship with laser beams that shoots a ton of zombies. And actually, I gotta say, this comic gets a little gruesome for what I'm amazed they could get through with being printed by a university.
Yeah, and I get the feeling the way the faces are drawn, those zombies are based off of real people at the college. I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure the head librarian was like, "Yes, draw me in, please. I want to kick some zombie ass."
You know, this is just a great example of taking something that you see that's popular, adapting it for a different purpose, and then, you know, coming out with it and, you know, sort of interacting with people in a fun way to get, you know, the basic of what you want them to know, you know, out in front of them and in a way that they want to actually read.
The end note is they're going to start selling this comic to raise funds for the library. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's brilliant extension of the concept.
Cool. All right, a few others real quickly. Another Eisner nominee. Now, last week we talked about Dave Kellett putting out his comic available for free so people could see it and then therefore be able to vote based on it for the Eisners. The same is true for another comic. This one is, I'm trying to find, it's called Aphrodisiac. It is put out, it's up for Best Humor Publication, and it was written by, God, anyone find the author on this? I cannot seem to find it.
I did not.
All right, well, we tried.
Yeah,
But it's on a site called Issu, where you can embed the entire thing in page and flip through it, which makes for a pretty cool approach in itself and something to look at.
It just goes to the point of how valuable these awards are, that these guys are willing to give away their product for the simple chance of winning the award. And, I mean, how important these awards are, not just as an ego thing, but just as a commodity, because these are guys who know the business, and they know that winning an Eisner Award is worth more than the comic itself.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like as much as everyone's out there and doing it for themselves, very much so in a great way. You know, sometimes having that bit of notoriety that everyone can say, "Oh, this is a bit of notoriety." Gives you a great opportunity to
Omi. I mean, Omi has gigs that are speaking fees, and if you had an Eisner, probably you'd get more, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, theoretically, yes. It depends on who you're actually shooting for with things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, if you're talking about people who value awards, i.e., certain types of companies or certain types of events. Yes, that will definitely influence them. I think your average person for our particular, you know, sphere, the webcomics-y kind of person, yes, they'll be more like happy that somebody won that they like. Oh my God, my favorite comic guy won it. But I don't think it's necessarily directly going to get you new readers as true. Such, unless you happen to be the type of person that reads comic award things.
True, but
I'm not talking about.
If you have some of those badges of honor, I got to be honest. You know, if you have some of those badges of honor, a lot of more people will take you more seriously. If it's the right badge and the right audience, I've definitely had situations where, you know, I've been doing the same stuff for a while. One thing I do gets linked by Boing Boing, and then I can say, oh, it got linked by Boing Boing. And then people say, oh, Boing Boing. I mean, and that's even a small example. That's just a link, you know? You take that and you put it with the level of, oh, well, I spoke at this one thing, and that's like, oh, level of expertise.
Oh, well, definitely. Yeah. I would make the statement that I would much rather have a Boing Boing link than win an award that very few other people, other directly would like.
But here's the thing. It's just part of our business model as webcomicers are cons. Are going to cons, are selling things at cons, are getting speaking fees for cons. If you have an Eisner, I mean, you can go to a lot of cons on their bill.
Yeah.
You can say, hey, I'm an Eisner winner. Do you want to come and have me speak? And they say, oh yeah. And then say, well, you've got to pay for my hotel and travel, and you've got to give me a table for free. And they'll do that for you because you have an Eisner. As opposed to, you know,
that would be more likely. That definitely would be more likely. I think that's sort of what I meant about like the places that, you know, traditional comic cons, more than likely, yes, you would get way more traction at a traditional comic con for having an award of that nature.
All right. Well, two more quick articles and then we'll wrap up. First of all, Scott McCloud just posted a lettering and panel borders tutorial that was made for Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator. He made it in Illustrator CS3, and he made it this week. which, or posted it this week, which I find interesting since we're now on CS5 and he talks about CS3 and how he now has CS4, which raises some questions there. But anyway, he posted a pretty good tutorial, and he says that it was the one that he referenced that he will do soon in the book Making Comics, and now it's finally up and running, even though the book's been out three years. So now it's up there for all to see. So be sure to go check that out if you are at all interested. I think tutorials like this are pretty helpful, so be sure to do check that out. Next up, Homer Simpson's Duff Beer has gotten a Lithuanian publisher in trouble due to the usage of Duff Beer in Simpsons comics as kind of an advertising tool for a fictional beer company. And because of it, that apparently breaks Lithuanian rules where you are not allowed to...
allowed to advertise alcohol.
Not allowed to advertise for alcohol. Right, there it is. So they were fined the equivalent of $3,838, which is a problem for them because Bongo Comics, the original publisher and licensor, does not allow any alterations, so they can't just turn it into soda or something. So they're a little up the Springfield Creek without a paddle. So with that... and finally, Paul Levitz of DC has an article which we found via Bleeding Cool about how DC has an online strategy completely revolving around waiting for the next kid to come up with a good idea and then steal it from him.
This was a speech at Google where he just sort of basically sucked up to Google amazing. Amount and then said, some kid is going to come up with the next idea that's going to really innovate. And then, of course, we're going to steal it from him and find out how to make money off of it.
Somewhere probably in one of the flyover states, somewhere between here and when I go home to New York tomorrow, there's some kid locked up in his basement figuring out how to create what the next thing grows from comics is and how he's going to connect it to the whole world through your tools that. And that will be an amazing moment. And a minute and a half after they're done, we're going to steal that idea and figure out how to do it. The rest of us, with the characters and properties that we know and love, but they have to figure out the future first. In other words, I'm not going to figure it out. Someone's going to figure it out.
But as we've talked about earlier, they see what someone did, but they don't understand it. They almost always just see the surface, like, oh, there's this web digital thing. Let's stick our stuff there and charge $17,000 and make it impossible and lock it up with this and make them go through these
like
hoops.
That new rock and roll music all the kids like.
Yeah, yeah. I heard this rock around the clock thing is kind of interesting. We're going to have to investigate it, form a committee, and figure out like how to do this.
You just went to the committee route.
Well, that's
my God,
what it
you
is.
Way too much experience.
An investigational
and I'm going to cry
committee.
Now.
All right. Well, with that, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up the show. The Webcomic Beacon will be coming to you live with another show right after this at noon Eastern time for those of you listening live. And for those of you not, tune into Ustream next week so you can get in on the action. With that, I would like to take a quick moment to thank each of our guests today. Thanks to Oni and Harknell. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thanks for having us.
Be sure to check out Intervention Con. It's coming up later this year and is looking for both guests and attendees. So be sure to check out the website, and I will hopefully see you there. Thanks to Fess. Hey, Fess.
Hey.
How's that sandwich?
Oh, I'm finished by now.
Awesome. And also Eric from Excern. Thank you so much for all the work that you put into the show today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, with that, if you have any tips, be sure to email them to us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. And with that, I wish you all a great week and peanut butter and jelly. See you all next time.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.